Actually, when the organizers invited me, I had two choices. One was to show you detailed numerical simulations that were pretty robust and interesting, but not from the point of view of Sagittarius A. And the other was to talk about a much less robust but potentially very interesting topic. What's that? No, I'm going to be back there, but this is seems to have... here we go. Are we up? Good. But is potentially somewhat controversial because it involves a new idea. So laterally, I chose the... naturally, I chose the latter, which is this new idea. And I... because it's in front of an audience that I really haven't appeared before, I put a lot of caveats in. There's a question mark, and it's called an initial assessment. So, but what we're trying to do here is understand, often people when they give talks, they say, well, we really don't know how jets are accelerated. Well, we have some ideas actually of how they're accelerated. We know that magnetic fields can do it, or other global magnetic fields. We know the rotation is involved. What we really don't know is how that entire structure is set up in an accretion flow and how it's all married with the kinds of things that Ramesh talked about this morning and the things that Heino talked about and Sarah talked about. So what I'm going to do is present a scenario to you which I've been working on mainly for X-ray binaries, first of all, and see if and then indicate some ideas on how this might be applied to the galactic center and hopefully stimulate some discussion. The what I'm first going to talk about is not the galactic center, but the plateau state of GRS 1915 plus 105, which is a 14 solar mass black hole, and the need to consider magnetically dominated accretion flow. Now, I didn't start out trying to invent yet another kind of accretion flow, but it was sort of demanded by the observations themselves. I'll briefly discuss some general properties of MDAFs. And then I'll talk about possible applications of this in a very qualitative way to Sagittarius A and hopefully get some of your input as to am I on the right track, are there places that I should be looking, and so on. And discuss both the quiescent state and the flaring state. So the need for MDAFs in low hard accreting black hole systems, particularly the 1915, which has become sort of a Rosetta Stone in this field. 1915, when it was first discovered, was noticed to have several different states. Now I think they're up to 18. The three that were really recognized was a high state in which there was little radioactivity, a flaring state, which you see right here, and a plateau state, which is this state right here. This is the radio, and then this is the corresponding X-ray, which also seems to go into a rather fairly steady plateau type of state. The plateau state is characterized by strong radio emission, so greater than 100 millijanskis, and the X-rays are hard and fairly low in their emission level. The VLA images, here's Vivek Dalvin et al.'s image back in 2000, shows a jet. It's very steady, and they've actually, they think they've measured the velocity of that, and it's sort of up around a few tenths of speed of light. It is not relativistic. And 1915 can stay in this particular state for weeks. So it's somewhat similar to Sagittarius A in the its quiescent state, but instead we have a 14 solar mass black hole instead of a 4 times 10 to the 6 solar mass black hole. But I do want to caution you that this this is a somewhat higher accretion rate state than Sagittarius A. That should be 0.01. But the accretion rate is still much less in Sag A than it is in 1915. But in both cases, they're sort of low and hard. Now, one thing that I really think is important is the difference between the power spectra in the high state, which has little radio emission and hence probably no jet, and the plateau state, which produces a fairly strong jet. In the high state, you see a power law, power spectrum. And that is sort of consistent with seeing a thin accretion disk and looking at the turbulence in the atmosphere of the disk. On the other hand, in the plateau state, when you enter this steady radio emission state, a shoulder appears. And that shoulder, I firmly believe, is in fact the ADAF, or the corona, that we're looking for. An ADAF is optically thin, very turbulent, so we'll be looking through the whole thing, and this strong turbulence that is being seen at sort of hertz, subhertz, and hertz-type frequencies is just what you would expect from an ADAF, except for one thing. The turbulence should go all the way out here to where this gold line ends, all the way to the black hole and to kilohertz frequencies, and we don't see that. Instead, this is strongly cut off at a few hertz, and a QPO pops up at 3 hertz or a few hertz. And so what's happened is that the disk or the ADAF is remarkably quiet inside about 100 M, or here's 100 M, or about 50 Schwarzschild radii in this particular case. Now, it's very difficult to make something quiet. It's easy to get a lot of high frequency variations at out here, but it's very difficult to get rid of high frequency variations in near the black hole. So the only way that I can think of doing that is to put a very stiff magnetic field inside this region. That stiff magnetic field turns off the magnetorotational instability that we just heard about, and at the same time, because this is so stiff, it's essentially a spokes of a bicycle wheel rotating at a uniform rate, we get a lot of power at about this characteristic orbital frequency, which is a few hertz. So with the addition of one component, we've gotten both the cutoff and the bandwidth limited noise and the QPO. Now, in addition, if you're going to have a magnetosphere that has closed field lines, you're always going to end up with open field lines as well. These field lines are going to be emanating from this thick accretion flow. And as Ramesh told us earlier today, that's an ideal way to pump material into magnetic field lines and into a jet. So we expect both inflow along these closed field lines and outflow along the open field lines. And in jet simulations that we and other people have done, if you have that sort of thing, you expect a jet at roughly the escape speed at that point, and that's a few tenths the speed of light. So, what is the directionality? I'll actually show you some magnetosphere results that people have already done, and you can get a better idea of it. This is just a hand-drawn thing. Another comment, though, in that vein, is that there's a very detailed numerical concept for how to produce vertical field lines. This is actually fairly robust. If you have a magnetic field loop anchored in a differentially rotating medium, it's also anchored further out, that loop will be sheared, it will rise, and it will naturally produce a vertical field line. That's called the magnetic tower mechanism. It very naturally produces vertical field lines and outflows. And Yoshikato-san, who is somewhere here in the audience, is actually the originator of that name and has done a lot of numerical work in that area. So I would claim that the observations are strongly suggestive of a magnetically dominated flow inside the ADAF, starting at maybe 50 Schwarzschild radii or 100 M. That's an open, certainly at this sort of level in 1915. In addition, a little more phenomenology. This is related to the diagram that Sarah showed. This is a schematic of it. Here we have the color magnitude diagram of Fender, Bologna, and Gallo, and they're sketches of disks are replaced with mine, and I've added this green curve. But basically, the idea is that as the source becomes softer, the jet that's produced becomes faster. And when you reach this jet line, you actually get a relativistic jet, And when you cross that jet line, you actually produce an outburst shock that travels through the previous jet material. And that is actually consistent with this MDAF idea, in that along this branch, we have an MDAF that's roughly constant in radius. And when we get to this corner here, the Chikrin-Sinayat disk will eat in through the ADAF, push the MDAF inward, and the radius of the MDAF then will be smaller. Hence, the frequency of the QPO, the orbital frequency, will increase, and the speed of the jet lifting off of the MDAF will increase as well. So again, it's consistent with this sort of phenomenology. So let's talk a little bit about what MDAFs might be. This is, I hope, will answer Milos's question. Basically, an MDAF is closely related to the black hole magnetosphere. Actually, these are advanced versions of the Blanford and Sinayat concept, in which you have an thin accretion disk here, and you have both closed and open field lines and a separatrix separating the two regimes. The only new thing I'm really saying is that it appears from the observations that the magnetosphere, in fact, is not just maybe 10 Schwarzschild radii in size, but a considerably greater distance, maybe 50, at least in the case of 1915. Now, it should be pointed out that these really are not black hole magnetospheres. These are accretion disk magnetospheres, because the currents that are supporting the field lie inside the disk. So this sort of thing can exist not only in a black hole system, but also a neutron star system. Although the extraction of black hole rotational energy is not the same, of course, in a neutron star system. And we get inflow, as I said before, along these strong field lines, and outflow along the vertical lines, which would eventually develop into a jet. The whole structure here in the inner several tens of m is rotating in this model at roughly a constant rate. And the claim is that you could potentially get an MDAF inside any reasonable accretion flow. Now, I don't have time to go into detailed models. I'll show you some results. But I do want to answer one question that might be in your mind as to why would this occur at maybe 50 or 100 Schwarzschild radii. And I have one suggestion. This is separate from the concept of MDAFs themselves, but this is an idea of how this might occur. That this is what you just saw. Actually, this is a simulation of a non-radiative flow. And the implied temperature here is of the order of a few times 10 to the 12 K for the ions, whereas for the electrons, it must be on the order of 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 11, because they cool so quickly. Now, the assumption in the ADAP solution is that you have a two-temperature flow inside this radius of maybe a few hundred m. If you look at actual models from Ramesh's papers and so on, you do actually see the temperature split out here. It's still a single temperature, and then as you move in, it becomes dual temperature. But there was some discussion that this may or may not be the case. And in fact, if MHD turbulence turns out to transfer energy rather quickly, or some other process, between the ions and the electrons, because they cool so quickly, will also effectively cool the ions. And so this structure will collapse at the radius where we reach the electron temperature, which is, as I said, on the order of 10 to the 10 to the 10 to the 11. And that occurs at roughly this sort of radius, roughly 60 to 600 m. Now, because cooling is not in the numerical simulations yet, this would not have been seen in the simulations like Charles has done and John Hawley and so on. So I'm predicting that if cooling is put in and it occurs in a certain manner, that in fact one will get a magnetically dominated structure. The way that magnetic dominated structure will occur is when you cool this inner region, the pressure will go down. The the magnetic field will be squeezed, so the flux, conservation of flux, will actually increase the magnetic field strength. And so the ratio of magnetic pressure to gas pressure will actually increase, or beta, the corresponding beta, will go down. 5 minutes? Okay. So these, so the field lines will tend to pop up out of this this portion, and you'll hopefully produce a magnetically dominated structure. So this, I've actually produced analytic models. Here are the Shkreli-Tsarnaev models. Here is the Narayanan-Yi ADAF model, and then this is the transition flow, which takes you from an ADAF to an MDAF. And notice that the height of the disk drops rather dramatically as you go inward. The temperature is constant, and then when you move into the MDAF, it actually drops as you go inward. So this actually gets cooler as you go in, and the ratio of the magnetic stresses to the dynamical stresses increases as you go inward, and it gets more magnetically dominated. So there are some models here. Now, what about Sagittarius A? Well, I failed to show you that the radial field gets stronger as you go inward than the azimuthal field, and what that does is it produces a simple spiral, a short spiral, that becomes radial very quickly. The material is in free fall along the field lines. There's very little dissipation now. The gravitational energy is simply being turned into mechanical energy of infall, and angular momentum is being transported outward along the field lines and dumped here, where it can produce and wind up the jet material more. Now, there's no reason for this to be axisymmetric, and if it is non-axisymmetric, then the rotations will correlate at roughly the orbital frequency at this point, and that is the claimed source of QPOs in this model. If Sagittarius A acts exactly like 1915, this is the same formula that I used for 1915, you should get about a day QPO. I don't know if I can get this down to 2.6 hours or not, but that's something to take a look at. As I said, the velocity of the jet is the escape speed here. So if this gets pushed inward for some reason, the velocity of the jet will go up. And it turns out this is a little bit more inefficient than an ADAF, but not so much so that it's very important. What is important is that if you have a strong field structure in the inner radius, in the inner portion of the accretion flow, it could dramatically change the predicted geometry and polarization properties. And this kind of needs to be taken into account, if nothing else, to just eliminate this sort of model from by using the data. Now you may ask, isn't there a mismatch between the rotating hole, which may be rapidly rotating, and this rather slowly rotating structure here, which is supposed to be in solid body rotation? The answer is yes, there is. But what will happen is that these field lines, this is a blow up of here, they will actually, in a steady state, they'll follow geodesics or near geodesics, so that this is sort of the path that a falling particle would take as it falls into the black hole, minus the fact that it has still some angular momentum that it's transferring outward along the field lines. This sort of thing actually did appear in the 3D simulations of Hirose et al. I don't have time to describe this in detail, but you can see that there is some angular momentum left in the flow, but the field lines are very stiff in the plunging region. But this is, again, only a few, maybe 5 or 6 m, not 100 m. But we do see a magnetically dominated flow in these four different simulations they ran. Now, what about flaring? Well, this is very speculative, but here's an idea. Suppose a blob of material larger than usual comes off and starts following this strong field line toward the black hole. The question is, which will win, the blob or the field? And if the blob is not very massive, not very dense, the field will always win. This is the sort of, if you put steady state MDAFs at different radii, this is the sort of structure that they would follow, and that's the Ram pressure. This is the magnetic pressure as a function of radius. for low density blobs, the MDAF will always win. But if a blob has a high enough density at a small radius, it will actually rip the field apart and produce it'll reform an ADAF, although it might be one temperature. So the claim then with this simple little model is that a massive blob will shear out the field and it'll reform an ADAF if it has enough angular momentum. And this is the angular momentum at the last stable orbit. And that particular new little ADAF will have its own MDAF and produce its own much faster jet for a very short period of time until the blob is accreted, and then this will go away and you'll be left with a quiescent state. So that's the summary. I won't rehash that because it looks like we're at the end. And I know you're going to ask me lots of questions, and here are all the ones I cannot answer. So I'm going to go one more slide and let you look at some simulations that have nothing to do with Sagittarius A. Thanks. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be because the field lines will be in the initial setup phase of this. The field lines should be drawn into nearly geodesic paths, so that the material is essentially in free fall toward the black hole. But free fall with a rotating black hole involves spiraling in rather than just falling straight in. But there'll be a slight deviation from true geodesic because the material that's falling in has angular momentum, and that angular momentum has to be taken up by the magnetic field and transferred outward to the transition radius. In this case, there will be a little bit of spinning down of the black hole because the angle of momentum is being dumped out at the outer radius in this model. But of course, you know, if you dump more material at it, then you could start spinning up the black hole pretty quickly. And there's not, as was pointed out earlier today, there's not much accretion in these very low hard states. Is the radiation that's required what? I don't think so, but I haven't really calculated that yet. The radiation would occur at this outer transition radius, not near the black hole. So it would be considerably down in radiative efficiency an ADAF that actually would accrete onto the black hole and radiate much of its energy. But it's a good question. I'm actually tooling up to be able to calculate that with synchrotron models and synchroself-Compton models. The models that I showed here were toy models using a very simple energy equation. You mean transitions to the soft state, actually? Well, that's the claim by Fender, Bologna, and Gallo. That's their phenomenological model for why you get outbursts as you transition over that jet line. So I'm following their phenomenological model based on actually four sources, not just 1915. But the claim is that you get a jet being produced all the time, and as you transition toward the soft state, the jet increases in speed and becomes relativistic, and it's the relativistic jet shocking into the non-relativistic jet that was prior ejected that creates what we see as an outburst in 1915 and 3C120 and so on. I think it's kind of a neat model, and it bears more looking at, but that's their concept.
You've got field lines coming from the disk, coming into the blackboard, very stiff, etc. Suppose I just turn it around and made a big, thick bundle of field lines, mostly DZ, just a lot of flux, enclosed around the blackboard, to have my disk, it comes, it gets truncated, and it gets the magnetosphere of these field lines, and then it percolates in. Would that give you pretty much the same effect?
Well, for Sagittarius A, if the high-frequency QPOs, the sort of 20-minute period, if that's real, and that's a caveat, then you need to somehow get material down very close to the last stable orbit to produce that high-frequency variation. And so if you got it blocked by strong field lines, I don't think you're going to do it. How? Well, okay, so it... Could be. I think I'd put my money more on the... partly because the magnetosphere solutions, actual... solutions for black hole magnetospheres have that sort of structure. Anyway. No. Well, they are actually, but they wrap up as geodesics. Yeah, basically, you can have. I was going to put up a Vlahakis and Konigal picture. Maybe I have it here. There. Here we see sort of the reverse. This is Vlahakis and Konigal's MHD jet model, and what's happening is. The field lines are being wrapped very dramatically by the rotation of the disk at the base, but the flow itself is actually much more gentle because the field lines can rotate through the plasma. The flow is this curved line here. The same thing will happen when you have a blob of, or when you have plasma falling toward a black hole. As soon as the field lines begin to follow near geodesic paths, the azimuthal component of the field will just slip right through the plasma, and the plasma will actually take a somewhat different path toward the black hole than strictly along the field lines. The field lines don't have to wind up forever. They will rotate at a uniform rate with a spiral structure. And then the plasma falls along that. Does that make sense? That's a qualitative way of describing what really is going to happen. But one end is stuck in the disk and one end is stuck in the black hole, but the whole structure is going to rotate at a uniform rate. Sorry, no, the black hole is rotating at a different rate. Yes.
Yeah. Not a perfect conductor. That's a simple. I mean, that he's just imagining that the two are anchored.
Yes.
And then, did that?
Right. Well, it's slipping along the stretch drives. Sure. Yes. Reconnection occurs in these MHD MRI simulations already, and that's going to be quite MHD turbulent. So So there'd be lots of reconnection and heating in that part of the disk. But as you go inward, my claim is that there'll be less reconnection as the field gets stronger. Unless it, for some reason it's ripped apart by some accretion event.
You've already understood. Yeah.
For the
That's similar to the question, would you expect to see a different image when Shep is able to image Sagittarius A, if you had an ADAF or an MDAF? And I think, and the answer is yes, but I don't know if an eclipse would be able to discern structure on several tens of Schwarzschild radii, whereas I think Shep's the LBI images probably will be eventually. Right? Tens of Schwarzschild radii at Sagittarius A. Okay.
So why don't we break?
Thank you, Dave.